When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And welcome into the Bruins Beat presented by Prize Picks. I am your host, Evan Marinofsky, alongside Belle Frazier. Belle, welcome back. What is up?
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Just very excited for playoffs. You were saying before, best time of the year. Mm-hmm. Practice this morning, had a different energy on the ice, off the ice. So really just counting down the seconds until Saturday's puck drop at TD Garden.
And you're back on this show. You hosted it for a week. My favorite comment someone gave after you were done, when I was back, they said, "Oh, I thought Evan was fired." And I'm like, "Really? That's you guys want? You want that? You want me to get fired? You want me gone? I can make that happen."
Irreplaceable, so, Evan. Come on.
Yeah, it's hard. I don't know about that. but it is the best time of the year. It is. Yeah. I mean, I said this to Connor on Poke the Bear yesterday. You know, when you go through the playoffs and you're done, you're like, "How did I do 6 months of like just regular hockey? How did I do Bruins, LA Kings in December? How did I, you know?" But then the summer regenerates all that. And you forget a little bit about the postseason and what that feels like, but it is the best time of year. And to me, this is the best first round matchup of all the matchups. I think this is the most anticipated, the most history. The cool thing is the Bruins will get all the primetime spots already 8 PM on Saturday. They don't get the 5 o'clock start. Thank God. Mm-hmm. It doesn't hit the same at 5 p.m.
No.
And it does not hit the same at 12:30 on Sunday afternoon. So it's good to see that they're getting the primetime spot. But it's Toronto. It's Maple Leafs Bruins. Obviously, quite the history. 2013, 2018, 2019. Leafs are older now. They finally get out of the first round. Belle, where are you at with this series? Just kind of overarching thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, from a storyline perspective, I'm obsessed with it. I think going into Tuesday's game against Ottawa, I was just like, I really hope the Bruins drop this one, like, which maybe isn't the best mindset because you want them to be playing their best hockey ahead of the postseason. Although their last two games of the regular season weren't great, it doesn't really worry me that much. But yeah, I mean, I was really excited when the Panthers also scored like 4 unanswered goals to beat Toronto to kind of have it end up this way, because I think Tampa Florida is going to be a great series too. But yeah, I think everyone wanted Toronto Bruins just because of the regular season stats too. The past 2 years, I think Bruins are 7-0 against Toronto in the last 7 meetings, which is great, but also doesn't matter come playoffs, as everyone knows it's a different season, different meaning to it. So forget what happened in the past, but the Bruins have matched up really well against Toronto this year. Talking to Brad Marchand and Charlie Coyle today, they said, you know, this is probably our biggest rival of the modern day right now, but anyone you play in the first round is going to be the biggest rival. So you're going to treat it like that either way. But I also think even though everyone was like, "Oh, we want Toronto," doesn't mean it's an easy like bye to the next round. You know, Toronto's going to be a hard team to get by. That's a team, you know, we were talking before recording that really needs to get out of the first round too, as do the Bruins. Obviously they did it last year, beat Tampa, but they have to kind of prove their legitimacy. You can't just make it out 1 year and then get bounced in the second round and lose in the first round again and expect that fan base to kind of be happy with where they're at. So I think it's two really desperate teams that are kind of on the stakes to prove themselves. Again, obviously, we know what happened with the Bruins last season. So it's going to be good. Original six. I mean, you really couldn't paint it up any better. And Bruins have home ice advantage too, which is kind of the cherry on top.
That's the big thing. I think Bruins getting home ice in this series is huge. I mean, every series matchups matter, but I think this series, the way they match up, I mean, you know, I think the first thing that jumps out is I don't think the Maple Leafs are, and you said it, a bye to the second round. I think that's the biggest thing. I think there's, you know, a lot of people kind of go off history. And I was saying this to you before recording. I will give a prediction on this series later in this episode. You said you will have one by the end. If you don't, it's okay. It's okay. You don't have to have one. But if I was going off history, I'd be more inclined to pick the Leafs, because at some point, if you do something enough, you're going to break through. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this core is older for the Leafs. I know they have a lot of the same problems. We'll get into that in this episode, goaltending, defense, things like that. But historically, you know, yeah, the Leafs are chokers. I mean, that we know that. But at some point, you have to break through. I remember saying this in 2019, being like, okay, 2013, 2018. Back then, 2013 was only like 6 years prior. Now, 2013 is 11 years ago.
That's like actually nauseating.
It's insane. It's like how when I write about a lot of the kids we cover in New England Hockey Journal, it'll be like 07s, 08s, 09s. Like, these kids were born, you know, fairly recently.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's weird. And I feel old, and I don't like that. It's interesting because these teams hold very different advantages over the other. The Maple Leafs are full of 5-on-5 offense. They're deep up front. You know, you have sort of spread out talent. Willie Nylander's been on the third line. You have Marner with Tavares on the second. You have Bertuzzi, Matthews, and Domi on the first line. Like, you have all these pieces spread out, which makes it much harder to stop. The Bruins hold the clear advantage on D. And I know the Bruins have not been as great defensively as they have been in past years, but they're still an elite defensive team. They obviously have the advantage in net, which we will get into. What should they do? Should they switch? How should they do it? But they are so opposite. It's not like they're two offensive juggernauts. It's not like these are two defensive teams and every game is going to be 2-1 and right. 1-0. This is really going to be a battle of kind of who wins that. My opening thing is, I think there's so many areas for the Leafs that the Bruins can exploit that I think it'd be easier for them to exploit those than the other way around. And mm-hmm. what I mean by that is, the Leafs hold the advantage offensively, which the Bruins can counter. And I know it's regular season, but they've countered it well this year. Goaltending and defense, you know, they've done that well. Although Toronto does generate a lot of chances, you know, around the net, cycling and all that. I still think the Bruins hold the advantage there. Whereas Toronto's penalty kill is not good.
Toronto's power play isn't
No, it isn't. It's not good. Hey, since March 1st, the Bruins have had a better power play than the Leafs, which is
okay. That is hard to do.
That's hard, very hard to do. I mean, I gotta respect that. It's like when UMass plays UConn in football. It's like the toilet bowl.
Right.
They got
a power play goal last game. It's all right.
They did. It was your guy Kevin Shattenkirk. Yeah, BU guy.
Proud to be you.
Proud to be you. We won't get into talking Frozen Four.
It's all right. Episode. We can skip it this time around.
We don't have time. We're on a very tight schedule.
Yeah.
But to me, I look at Toronto's deficiencies in net with Ilya Samsonov, who has been better of late. His record is good. The underlying mm-hmm. numbers are not. Defensively, the Leafs are kind of still trying to figure out their pairings. I think that's an opportunity for the Bruins to score. And yeah. I know that I've talked about this before. I don't love the Bruins scoring depth. I don't love Jakob Lauko on the third line as he was at practice on Thursday. But I think there's more opportunities for the Bruins to exploit the Leafs than the Leafs to exploit the Bruins. I'm curious what your thought is on that.
Yeah. And I think your point about being a little bit nervous about the Bruins depth of scoring is going to come to play huge in this series for the Bruins. I think secondary scoring will kind of determine if they win this series or not. And you look at the bottom six, Thursday when this is released. But anyway, Thursday at practice.
Someone's listening 10 years from now. They're like, oh, today? Fred Marchand's 50 years old.
But the fourth line was James Van Riemsdyk, Boqvist, and Pat Maroon. And, you know, I not that I don't like that, but I think when you look at, 2 weeks ago when Boqvist moved up to the third line and had Jake DeBrusque with him being with a fast, quick, you know, opportunistic winger was good. And it was only a couple of games. And even, I'm not saying you should put Jake DeBrusque and Boqvist back together, but I do think, like, how is Montgomery utilizing the skill set of each of his bottom six guys? And I don't know if Boqvist having two older, slower guys on his wings is going to kind of promote him to have that scoring touch that he does have. And he's proven he's had because he's moved up in the lineup. So I think that's going to be important. And then you look at guys like Trent Frederick and Morgan Geekie, and they're going to have kind of coming out parties in the playoffs if the Bruins want to go far. Don Sweeney talked about Trent Frederick kind of getting things going in the postseason, that if he plays with pace and emotion, the rest will follow. You know, he wins the Nesson Seventh Player Award on Tuesday, so that's got to do something for the confidence. He made a joke that he thinks his family sent in all the votes. But
I think they did. I was shocked Danton Heinen did not win.
I know. I was like, had the tweet ready. I was like, and Danton Heinen.
Like, shit. I gotta backtrack on all this.
But no, I think bottom six guys like that, I mean, you're going to need it. And obviously David Pastrnak's there. Hopefully Marchand gets going. Zacha and Coyle have been super responsible the whole season. But yeah, I think depth of scoring is going to be a big thing. But at the same time, Bruins defense, I have a lot of confidence in. You even look at, you know, Andrew Peak, who we talked to today, newly acquired at the trade deadline, his first NHL playoffs. The first thing he said when he got to Boston was, I'm excited to be in a locker room where the expectation is to win, where you're a contender. And now, you know, he was on the third pair with Kevin Shattenkirk last game and Thursday in practice. So it looks like he'll probably get a shot at least a couple games in the first round. So I think when you see that the puzzle pieces are kind of really coming together on the back end, and that you can kind of flip in Parker Watherspoon if you need to. And Brandon Carlo missed the game for maintenance, but was back at practice. So who knows the real health of a lot of these guys, but the Bruins blue line is looking pretty good. And I do agree with you where I think they have the upper hand there. And just in terms of, you know, suffocating teams, demanding the neutral zone, which will be important against Toronto.
Yeah, you hit on it with on D. I think they look better. I want to get into it in a little bit because Thursday practice, Lindholm, McAvoy, Grizzly, Carlo, and then Shattenkirk and Peak. There, you mentioned a thing there with Boquist, so that's really interesting. And I think it presents a, you know, I don't expect that line to stay together of Van Riemsdyk, yeah, Boquist, and Maroon. But first, a quick word from our friends over at Prize Picks. Quick break in the action to tell you about my good friends over at Prize Picks. Prize Picks has something for every sports fan, from basketball and hockey to League of Legends and everything in between. You can pick LeBron, Caitlin Clark, Connor McDavid, and Jude Bellingham, all in the same entry. Prize Picks is the best way to get action on sports in more than 30 states across the country, including California, Texas, and Georgia. Prize Picks even offers injury insurance so that your entries stay in play even if one of your players gets injured. For basketball games, if you have a player who exits the game in the first half and does not return in the second, Prize Picks will have your back and not count that as a loss. Personally, the NHL regular season, it's winding down. And when the postseason begins, I'm taking more on David Pastrnak point totals. How could you not? I'm expecting a pretty big postseason from one David Pastrnak. And with the Red Sox, how can you not do the same on Rafael Devers' home runs? Download the app today and use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, download the Prize Picks app today and use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Now, back to the show. It's interesting that Van Riemsdyk, Boquist, Maroon pairing on the fourth line, and because I agree with you, I liked Boquist with someone fast. Mm-hmm. But I've talked a lot in the past couple days about they need a shutdown line. Who is the shutdown line for the Bruins? Who can you put out there against the Matthews line, or if you want to even throw it out there against Tavares? And that's usually in the past, the Bruins have had a fourth line that does that. That line is not doing that. And I don't mean that as a slight. I don't mean that as a slight, but that line isn't. And the biggest thing is Boquist is not great on draws.
Yeah.
And that was sort of the point of putting Johnny Beecher with him, was that you had a guy who could win a faceoff and then they'd flip flop and Beecher would be on the left and Boquist would be down the middle. And I just don't know how that fits. In a perfect world, Van Riemsdyk would be up with Geeky and Frederick. But Van Riemsdyk,
I love that trio when JVR is up there with them.
When he's cooking. And yeah. I think, I don't know, veteran player, like, I'd rather Lauko be down with Boquist and Maroon. If you're going to go for that kind of a line where they're fast and heavy, Van Riemsdyk has more of an offensive touch, especially around the net, than Jakub Lauko does. To me, I would flip those guys, and maybe they will flip them on Friday. Maybe they'll try something different. And I don't expect the bottom six to stay constant throughout this playoff series, but I would much rather have the line have an identity. I don't know what the identity of Van Riemsdyk, Boqvist, and Maroon is. I think going up against a deep team like Toronto up front, I think you need to have these lines having an identity.
I totally agree with that. And that's been a struggle for the Bruins all year, getting that fourth line a real identity. I think you saw it a bit when Beecher was here for his second stint. And I think it's interesting. Don Sweeney today said they will be calling up two players from AHL Providence for practice tomorrow. He mentioned one of them will probably be Mason Lauri. And then I would expect the second one is Johnny Beecher, because on Tuesday we were talking to Jim Montgomery pregame, and Jason Megna came up and someone asked, is Beecher, still a possibility for a playoff lineup spot? And he said, absolutely. So I can't imagine he says that Tuesday and Beecher isn't back here to at least get.
Sorry, kid.
Yeah, change my mind. But I do agree with that. And I think Beecher too, his size is such an advantage, but his speed too, just to go back to that, I think that makes sense to go down there with Boqvist and to have him on the draws. So I imagine he'll definitely get some reps tomorrow, not trying to predict the future of the moves the Bruins are going to make. Maybe they won't, but I think that's still a good option. And like you said, the bottom six isn't going to look the same for an entire series or maybe even game to game. But I think having those options and kind of those three players in JVR, Lauko, and Beecher that you can kind of flip around will be helpful just to have a different look. And based on matchup too, like you can expect of how the Bruins are going to match up against the Leafs based on previous games, but till you get a couple periods under your belt, you really don't know. So I think, Montgomery isn't afraid to make those adjustments even in game. So it'll be interesting to see if Beecher kind of gets his time to prove himself in the postseason, or they go the more veteran, maybe safe route.
I agree with you. And the other thing that you mentioned is Geeky and Frederick. It is a big postseason for them. Maroon even mentioned Thursday at practice how secondary scoring obviously becomes such a huge factor. I mean, that typically wins you a series. Who gets more secondary scoring from their forwards or kind of guys on D? For those guys are going to need to be good. And that hasn't always been the case for Trent Frederick. I mean, Morgan Geeky was in Seattle last year as a fourth liner. So I don't know if there was a ton of postseason production, but with Frederick, there has not been in past years. And this would be a big spot for him. This would be a huge spot for Trent Frederick to pipe it up a little bit and get some scoring. I want to touch on the goalies. We got to do this. We have to have this conversation. We have to discuss it. We have to hash it out. And before we do that, our friends over at Factor Meals.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The goalies, Swayman, Omar, we've had this conversation 1,000 times this year. It's always been different. I hope people aren't bored of it, but I would say it's the biggest Bruins storyline.
It's hard to stop talking about when Montgomery nor Sweeney will give any leeway as to what it might be. We asked Montgomery on Tuesday and he was like, don't have an answer. We're like, will you have an answer Saturday pregame? And he was like, I don't know. I don't think anyone's going to know until warmups, it feels like.
And then Sweeney was asked about it on Thursday and said, we've confidence in both. And someone asked him a similar question at the very end. And he's like, my mind hasn't changed in the last 20 minutes.
Yeah.
That was pretty funny. He's showing some personality. That's never a bad thing.
Okay, personality.
Yeah. There's a human in there.
Yeah.
Which is good. But I think with the goalies right now, the big question is who starts game one?
Yeah.
Is it Swayman, who has struggled since the All-Star break, but had those two really strong games against Toronto down the stretch? Or is it Linus Ullmark, who was kind of the worst of the two, or not as good? He was great. I mean, I don't want to say he was worse. He just, his numbers weren't as good for most of the year, but since the trade deadline, he's been outstanding. I go with Swayman. I go with Swayman game one. I'm fine if they go with Ullmark in game one, because if they stick with the rotation, I'm fine with that. But to me, Swayman's performances against Toronto, about a month ago, I know it's been a little while, but I still like how he played in both those games. I give that to Swayman. Swayman's kind of had the edge this year. I know he hasn't the last 2 months, but just for a boost for his confidence. And if they do the rotation, I don't want to say who cares, because that's not right. It's the playoffs. Every game matters. Mm-hmm. But I would go with Swayman in game one. And then you see where you're at, whether or not you switch to Ullmark in game two, keep Swayman for game two, and then go to Ullmark in game three. I'm curious where you're at on this.
Yeah, I think I'm going Ullmark game one, just because in the same way that we're saying the way the Bruins played Toronto in the regular season, the past seven games doesn't fully carry over and you can't underestimate them. You know, it's how you're playing in the moment. Like, teams go on to have crazy runs because they get hot in April, May, June. And I think you have to go with who's playing their best hockey in this moment. And I agree that Swayman has had the edge basically for a majority of the season, but you look at the last 10, 15 games and I feel more confident in Ullmark, I think statistically as well, but I don't think you run with Ullmark the entire series. That being said, like, if they start, I'm kind of in the same boat with you, is like, okay, if they start Swayman when I think they should start Ullmark, okay. Like, if we see Ullmark the next game or the game after that, I'm kind of okay with that. I think they have to try out some variation of the goalie rotation. I don't think that means that you're like tied down to doing one game off, one game on, one game off, one game on. Linus Ullmark posts a 35 save shutout in game one. I don't think anyone's going to be mad if you go with him to game two and then Swayman game three, you know? So mm-hmm. I do think it's circumstantial. But at the same time, I'm not a goalie. The mental side of it is so different.
You're not? Like, you're not a goalie? I thought I only had you on this podcast because I Breaking thought you were news. A goalie.
No, but ridiculous. I think for them to kind of know, you know, they're in the routine now that, all right, I'm going to sit, do whatever I need to do the game I'm not playing, and then I'll be ready for the next game. So I do think there is something to say if Montgomery's and, you know, the coaching staff as a whole is making the decisions on the fly. That can be a little bit probably hard, but I do think they have to test it out, because you look at last year, they didn't test it out. They throw Swayman in hot water in game seven and he blames the series on himself. We don't need to go back to, you know, game five, if Ullmark should have come out, whatever. But I think just after not doing it last year and it not evidently not working out, it wasn't just because of goaltending, but I think you have to test it. And it's the way the Bruins have had success this season. You know, when Ullmark got hurt, Swayman came in and won a handful of games and proved that he could handle, you know, some extended workload, but that was just three or four games. You know, the Bruins have put themselves far above expectations for what was supposed to be a transition year, primarily because of the guys in net. So I think it would be a bold move to go away from that. But at the same time, it's not traditional to rotate goaltenders in the playoffs. You know, it's things we've discussed over and over again. But it seemed like, based on what Sweeney said today, they're confident in their system. They're confident in the rotation. And it seems like they'll lean towards some version of that, which I also think these two guys both deserve playing time in the playoffs, you know?
Yeah.
They love each other, the goalie hugs, whatever. It's a brotherhood, but they're competitors. They're NHL players. They're professional goaltenders. They want to be the one to help their team win. And I think it would be a disservice to both Swayman and Ullmark kind of have their seasons end at, you know, game 82 instead of round one, round two, who knows?
Are we overthinking this? And I say that in a sense that, you know, we've debated it all year, not just you and me, but, you know, me and Connor and everyone's debated it.
Yeah.
What, you know, should you do some sort of rotation in the playoffs, and should it be, you know, Swayman game one and two, Ullmark game 3-4, you know, or should it be, you know, on and off? They've done on and off all year.
Yeah.
And it's worked. They did on and off all last year and it worked. Why not continue the same? Like, I'm kind of going to that where it's like, you've done it this whole time. And I agree. If Linus Ullmark has a 38 save shutout in game one, you kind of have to go to him in game two. I get that. But all year, you've done the on and off every other game.
Yep.
I think, you know, you look at last year, they divvied away from it completely in the playoffs and it blew up in their face. What's funny is they were up 3-1 in the series. And it's funny, like, it's funny to think back to talk and be like, oh my God, it actually almost worked. But I think so much of our talk about it is we treat the playoffs like a different animal. And it is. The playoffs are different. I'm not equating them in the regular season. But in some way, wouldn't you just say, you know what? We're going to continue with what's working. It's working. It's the same way that you just said for Linus Ullmark, right? Like, start Linus Ullmark because he's been the better goalie of late. It's the same thing. Oh, you know, There's no one in the lineup right now that, Andrew Peake's been playing pretty well of late. Let's throw, it's the same type of thing of, hey, it's been working. Let's just not go away from that yet. Let's just roll with what's hot. And what's hot for the Bruins is not one of the two, it's the tandem. And I think that's where, if you want to do Omark 1 and 2, Swayman game 3, 4, I mean, you can do that for sure. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but I don't know. The on and off things worked. I maybe we're overthinking it. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I agree. I go with what works in the playoffs. Like, who cares? As long as it's working, as long as you're winning games at the end of the day. And I also think it's interesting too, from the Toronto point of view, if you're facing a different goaltender every night, the Bruins basically defend the same in front of Swayman and Ullmark. It's not like they've done it all season. Like you said, you're not going to get a different look on the back end, but different goalies have different strengths and weaknesses. And Toronto has played both of them, but I think there is something to say about Toronto not facing, the same style of goaltender every night and what that does for their own game plan. Maybe it's kind of an advantage to know you're not going to see Ullmark every night and kind of have to shift to, what are Swayman's weaknesses? Where do we need to shoot on him? So I think that's also a tool from the other side that, rotation has worked for the Bruins, but also it could be, even more so used to the advantage to kind of throw Toronto off its own game.
It could. And I think it, especially in a series like this, you face a lot of rubber. And the other thing is, I think both goalies could handle extended games in a row. I'm not saying Jeremy Swayman can't play 3 games in a row. I think he can. And I think he wants to. But I also think what's worked has worked. And if last season taught you anything, why not just stick with how it worked throughout the whole season? And it's their biggest strength. They're not a great 5-on-5 scoring team, although they are much better at getting net front chances. So I'll give them that. Defensively, they're good, as we said. Maybe not as good as past years. The goaltending is your thing. That was the point of keeping Omark around, is that that's your thing. So use it to your advantage. Yeah. I think is the biggest thing. Couple other things I want to hit on, because this is the last Bruins beat I think I'm doing until playoffs start. So I'm getting all off my chest at this point. My poke the bear duties are done. My first Bruins beat of the week is done. So it's this. You mentioned secondary scoring being big, and I agree with you. It's going to be huge. But I also think scoring from that Marchand, Coyle, DeBrusk line is going to be equally as big. Yeah. Because in Toronto, if they stick the Tavares line, who's primarily been their shutdown line, on Zacha, Pastrnak, and Heinen, and let's just say, they shut him down or it works, that Marchand, Coyle, DeBrusk line is going to be necessary for the Bruins to get some scoring. And I know Marchand's been cold of late. Everyone outside of Zacha and Pastrnak and a little bit of Heinen's been cold of late. But I think those three are going to be so important in this series. I would almost say they're sort of an X factor. I don't think they're the X factor, but I think they're up there in terms of getting to grade A ice, getting legitimate scoring chances. And I also think that's probably the Bruins' best shutdown line in Boston, going against whether it's Matthews' line or Tavares. I don't know why they would do the Tavares line, but I would assume it'd probably be the Matthews line. That Coyle and Marchand, and DeBrusk is defensively responsible. So, you have that too. We can debate that. But I think that could be the line that really makes it or breaks it for the Bruins in the series.
No, I totally agree with that in terms of them being the shutdown line, especially with the way Charlie Coyle has played this season and, the type of player Brad Marchand is. I also think when you talk about secondary scoring, that's me kind of assuming that the top six will be doing their job.
You hope.
It's like, let's get secondary scoring because, the first two lines are already doing what they're supposed to be doing.
But I completely agree with you. Secondary scoring is what wins a series. Yeah. I completely get that.
Yeah, but it's time for Jake DeBrusk. I'm exhausted. We give him so many excuses throughout the season. I feel like every, he'll string together 4 games and we're like, all right, he's finding his groove. He's going to prove that he can sign a contract at the end of the season, this, that, and the other. And it's like, all right, this is literally your final tryout. And he's played great against Toronto this season, which is a good sign if you want to, really take the optimistic route. But like you said, you need your top six wingers to score. You need Jake DeBrusk to go out there and have, I don't know if we're going to say a point a night, you would like him to have a point a night, but just keeping expectations realistic. But yeah, you need that. And beyond, you know, shutting down the opponent's top lines, you need them to be a threat offensively. Yeah. Charlie Coyle has been a great two-way player, as has Brad Marchand, as had, honestly, Jake DeBrusk throughout the whole season, because he's had to focus on, you know, completing his 200-foot game when he's not scoring, going to a plan B when his plan A isn't there. But I completely agree with you, where guys like Jake DeBrusk, like Brad Marchand, like Charlie Coyle, they need to show up. And they know that, too. You know, it's not like the effort level. I'm not worried about the effort level. I'm not worried about the buy-in or the want to win. But if the goals aren't dropping, they're not. And that could be a really big problem for the Bruins.
I agree. I think it's a big one. And they can do it. I'm not like worried about them. I just think it's going to be.
That's the thing. Like DeBrusk can do it. He can.
I know. Everything you're saying about Jake DeBrusk, I have watched Jake DeBrusk since his career began with the Bruins in 2017-18. And it has been the same storyline for years now of has these really good stretches. And it's like, holy crap, you got something there. Like, that's a legit top six wing. I mean, every trade deadline, I remember, I think it was the 2020-21 when they were in on, or, you know, Matthias Ekholm, then of the Predators, talked about to come to Boston. It was like, okay, if you send out the package, you're on DeBrusk. But I remember Connor and I being like, they're going to trade DeBrusk and he's going to be a 30-goal scorer with Nashville. You just know it.
But always happens.
Yeah, but he has that potential. He has it. You know it's there. So I agree with you. This is a huge postseason for Jake DeBrusk. And he's been great against the Leafs in the playoffs historically. I think that's another good sign.
He needs to, like, get angry, you know? Like, I think
– I know. Get mad.
Yeah, get mad. Also, he's one of those guys – you know, a lot of the Bruins have different personalities with the media, but you'll bring up a stat to DeBrusk, like, oh, you guys have lost the last five games against this team. Like, what do you need to do differently? He'll be like, oh, really? We have? Like, didn't feel that way. You know, like, he's a little defensive about it. I'm like, get pissed off at us. Like, let's get on the podcast, say Jake DeBrusk isn't going to score and go score 10 in this series. You know, like, I think he has a lot of pride in his game and in the Bruins game. And I think that comes out when he talks about it, where, he never talks overly negative about his own game or the team's game. And I think you got to use that to kind of like prove it with action, not just saying like, yeah, we're figuring it out, blah, blah, blah. So I guess I'm angry and I want Jake DeBrusk to channel that and then go score some goals. But yeah,
that's valid. You gotta put Jake DeBrusk getting no points and minus 10 when the series ends into the universe. Like, that's what's going to happen, Jake. All right. You have no goals. No
psychology
assists.
Here.
Yeah. You're going to score on your own net. You know, like you're going to be benched in game four. And he just gets all pissed off. Maybe that's what works.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you know what? There are guys at every level that before a game, you got to get them pissed off. And that's what it takes. Mm-hmm. And maybe he's one of those guys. I agree with you. He's had some good battles with the Leafs in the past with like Nazem Kadri when he got cross-checked in the face, but obviously Kadri's not there anymore. So maybe they need to make Nazem Kadri the fan banner captain. They need to make Nazem Kadri the fan banner captain for every game and just like cut to DeBrusk on the bench. Just like
I'm ready.
It's like seething, you know, maybe that's what needs to happen. That'll be another interesting thing, who the fan banner captains are this time of year, because it's always a fun thing. I remember Bill Belichick did it in 2019 and being like up close, because I remember like rushed down to the concourse to get like a video up close, you know, and he was it was like weirdly happy. Then the minute that the spotlight went off, he was like, you know, I just walked out of the stands, which is that quick. So and another interesting thing, and it kind of hits on the shutdown stuff we've talked about. Brandon Carlo has been the defenseman with the most success against Austin Matthews this season in the past. And it makes sense. He's a shutdown defender. That's what he's best at. And I was kind of interested that Lindholm and McAvoy were together on Thursday, and Grzelcyk and Carlo were the second pair. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious if they go with Grzelcyk and Carlo against Matthews' line. Now, maybe, you know, you go with the fact that Grzelcyk's quick. Domi's kind of quick. Maybe that's kind of how it lines up. And the other end of that is also because it's not like it's Marner, Matthews, and Nylander, and it's just a powerhouse line and you need to put your two best defensemen up against them. Maybe they look at it from the perspective of, you know, it's Matthews and then Domi and Bertuzzi. Grzelcyk can handle those guys. Carlo kind of focused on Matthews. But I also look at it from the perspective of, I kind of want Grzelcyk and McAvoy together in this series in terms of puck moving. And if you can put Lindholm and Carlo on that Matthews line, you kind of free up McAvoy and Grzelcyk to be a little bit more offensive. But I don't know. I'm curious to see, because, you know, they've been changing those pairings all season, going back and forth. I just wonder if they're going to keep Grzelcyk and Carlo together to go against that Matthews line.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because when Montgomery made this shift, like earlier this month, he talked about, someone asked, is this just, you know, end of season, you're testing your options, or is this a pair you could actually see in playoffs, referencing Lindholm and McAvoy? And he said, for now, it's testing, but, you know, against it, they were playing the Capitals at the time. And he was saying, it's also matchup based, like against a top heavy team like the Caps, you're going to put your best two defensemen against their best guys. And he said, yeah, in the playoffs, it will just determine on how it kind of represents itself. So I think it's a good point with the Maple Leafs, where unfortunately for the Bruins, they have threats on every single line. So it's not like you want to, you know, keep your best two defensemen on, you know, the top six. But I also think Lindholm has looked really good with McAvoy. You know, he has not had the offensive flair or game that he had last season, but, and not that his points have skyrocketed since playing with McAvoy, but he's jumps in the play a little more. And I think when they were first paired together, I was a little worried because I was like, those are two guys who want to, you know, maybe leave their responsibilities at the blue line sometimes and get more involved, but they've really balanced each other out. But at the same time, I think the Lindholm and Carlo pairing is just so responsible too, where if, and you know that McAvoy can make up for any mistakes Grzelcyk makes, not to say that he's been terrible, but, you know, he is the weaker link out of the four of those guys.
Yes.
So, yeah, I don't know.
Matt Grzelcyk's pissed. Now Matt Grzelcyk's just like fired up. Like, I'm the weak link. You say that about me? I'm the weak link?
Weak link might be a strong word, but I mean, out of like,
I know what you mean.
The top four guys. He's number four. Yeah. But I will say Matt Grzelcyk has been better the last 2 months of the season. Halfway through the season around Christmas, I was like, oh man. But yeah, I don't know. I do like Lindholm and McAvoy, but I wouldn't be surprised or upset if, you know, Carlo and Lindholm went back together.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. The underlying numbers for Lindholm and McAvoy are really good this year.
Yeah, they are.
Four percentage and expected goals. Like the numbers are good. They've looked good. Matchup wise, I don't know. Maybe they do it. Maybe they put Lindholm and McAvoy against the Matthews line. And because the biggest thing is you have to shut down Auston Matthews, but then you also have Mitch Marner with John Tavares, and you have William Nylander potentially on the third line.
Spread it out a bit.
There it is. Maybe they will. And the other thing I think it's interesting is like where Andrew Peak factors in too. Like Andrew Peak is a pretty good shutdown defender, he's very physical. I think Peak's going to see minutes again. Like if Nylander's on the third line, I think Peak's going to see a lot of minutes against William Nylander. It wouldn't surprise me if Andrew Peak got a lot of minutes against, you know, that second line with Tavares and Marner. And, you know, you also look at like, okay, who's his partner going to be? Are they going to put Wotherspoon there? Wotherspoon's a better shutdown guy than Shattenkirk, but Shattenkirk also helps out on the power play more. So like, you kind of have I think it is matchup based. I think it is how this series goes. If there's going to be a lot of penalties and there's going to be a lot of chippiness and you're going to be on the power play, well, then Shattenkirk's probably the guy you want. I like Lindholm also on the power play. I'd love to kind of get a glimpse at that. They really haven't done a lot with that this year. But I do think they are at least good enough on D that I don't know if you can go wrong either way. Like, I think you're in a pretty good spot on D, which leads us to this. Predictions. What happens in this series? And I don't know if you've come up with something yet, because it is Thursday. So, you know, you don't, usually people tweet out their predictions like right at the start. So I'll go first. If you have a prediction you want to throw out there, then throw it out. Everyone thinks this series is going seven games for either side. And I think the probabilities, I was reading The Athletic this morning, the probability is very high. This series goes seven. 13 went seven, 18 went seven, 19 went seven. All game sevens were in Boston, which helped a lot for the Bruins.
That's kind of crazy.
I know. I know. It's pretty insane. 13, everyone lumps in. I mean, 13 was a totally different Maple Leafs team. Yeah. I mean, that was like Phil Kessel. Van Riemsdyk was on that team. Nazem Kadri.
Right.
Van Riemsdyk was on that
team. He talked about that on 32 Thoughts. I don't know if you listened to that episode with him. But
I didn't. I missed it.
It was great. Just talking about that series. Yeah.
Must have been fun talking about game seven. I think this goes six, which isn't a crazy thing going off seven. And I picked the Bruins. I have Bruins in six. And the reason is kind of what I've drawn out in this episode. I have been very vocal about my worries with Bruins secondary scoring and all that. But I look at the areas Toronto has, and I think it's an opportunity for the Bruins to exploit them more than Toronto can exploit the Bruins holes. And the Bruins holes is really scoring. That's the area that the Bruins aren't great in, but the Maple Leafs are not good enough defensively or in net to counter that. I think the Maple Leafs are a legitimate opponent. I've said all along in the past couple of weeks, I'd rather Toronto, but I don't think it's overwhelming. I don't think it's because like, oh, it's going to be so easy. But I go Bruins in six, and I know I wouldn't be shocked to see a lot more people pick the Leafs in this series, but I think going off of how I see it, there's a lot of things that the Bruins can exploit. And if they can exploit a couple of them, I think they win the series in six games. Do you have it? Do you have a prediction?
Yeah. Well, I think this week, it's been like 2 days since we knew they were playing Toronto, but it's been like,
like it's been a week.
Yeah. I'm like, what day is it? I've had like whispers in my head of Leafs in seven, but I think I'm going to go Bruins in seven. I don't see this team losing. I think they'll probably be out second round. That was my prediction a couple months ago, but I just, for a lot of the reasons we discussed today and that you just said, I think it's going to go seven, but I do think the Bruins have the edge, and there is something to say about the pressure of the playoffs and how each of these teams are able to handle it and not to rely on the history of, you know, Toronto being the classic first round exit. But you saw the way they came in and played in the second round last year, and they kind of just lost it. And I think it's half a mental battle and the rivalry that goes around with it too. It's two different teams from last year, but I do think the Bruins will pull this one off, hopefully for us, so we get to keep on covering the team, and hopefully for them.
True.
But yeah, I'll go Bruins in seven. I hope it goes seven. Just be a fun series. I feel like you can't get Bruins Maple Leafs and not have them go to seven, but if they get it done in six, hey, that's no complaints here.
I would rather seven. And there's two other things I want to mention that we kind of touched on and kind of didn't. I think the Bruins are better. The way they generate goals is a little bit better than last year. Last year, it was a lot of perimeter stuff. Mm-hmm. They just were better, so they just got goals that way. Whereas now they are better, you know, getting higher danger chances. And I think that matters come the playoffs. I think they're more open to getting to grade A ice. I know it hasn't looked that way lately, but over the course of the season, that's how they've done it. The other thing I think is, look at sports. When a team gets embarrassed the way the Bruins did last year, I mean, they got freaking pantsed in the playoffs last year. Teams find a way to respond to that the next year.
Yeah.
There's a lot of motivation. And I mean, let's face it, the Bruins were for most of the season in first place. They were one of the best teams in the league. They shouldn't have been. I mean, on paper, I had them in like third in the Atlantic to begin the season. I just think there's a different motivation. There's a different feeling around this team right now. And I know that they're nowhere near as good on paper as they were last year, but I just don't see this team, as you said, getting bounced in the first round. Maybe that's my Bruins be colored glasses and I can't see the truth, but I just don't see it. I don't see it with this team. They're getting out of the first round, I think.
I mean, that's the best thing about sports. The best thing about hockey is that in playoffs and honestly in any game, it almost doesn't matter your roster. Like, I think that's why people come back to sports, because miracles can happen so easily in them. You know, like you're in a real world, you have control over nothing. And then you go to a hockey game for 3 hours and like the underdog wins by 3 goals and you're like, this is the best feeling ever. So I do think that's such a huge factor. It's like when teams have this big of a chip on their shoulder, embarrassment. And also there's a lot of pride in that locker room. I think it does fuel them. You see it every year, you know, Tampa gets bounced the first round and then goes wins the cup the next year. Even, you know, a BU example, they lose by, you know, it felt like 10 goals at the Frozen Four against Minnesota in the national semifinal. And then they beat them 6-3 to come back. So and then they were down 2-0. So this isn't even like a plug for BU because obviously they lost.
There it is. I knew it was coming at some point.
There is something to say, like you're down 2-0. And in the back of your mind, you're like, these guys ended our season last year. We have to find a way to win. I think the Bruins will have that in the back of their minds the entire time. Not that they lost to the Leafs, but they lost in front of the crowd that's cheering them on this year. So, and I do think it's a legacy thing too, to carry this on. But Brad Marchand talked about at the beginning of the season as a captain, you know, taking the things that Bergeron and Krejci and all the guys before them kind of planted in that locker room and being able to move it into this next era. And I think, you know, what better way to say, like, we learned from you, we're growing from last season, and we're still pushing this team in the right direction. So, yeah, I think that's an edge too, maybe an emotional, mental edge for the Bruins. But I do think it does, you know, play a factor in series like this.
Yeah, and I just think the taste in their mouth from last year of not winning one for Bergeron, not even coming remotely close.
Yeah.
I think that stings too. I remember Montgomery said it after the first game of the season, like, you know,
yeah, that was tough.
No Bergie and stuff like that. Like, and that's where I don't see it. I don't. And maybe that makes me pick Bruins in 7, but to me it's 6. I think the series goes 6 games. I don't know. Like, I always have a weird feeling when it comes to really hyped up matchups that it's not going to live up to the hype. And I think everyone's hype is it's going to come down to a coin flip in game 7. And when everyone thinks something like that, I always go, I don't know. Whenever like the odds are, I'm like, I just
BUBC Hockey East final. And then BU gets absolutely waxed. Like,
well, that's the thing. And I was adamant. I was like, there's no way the universe is letting us get a BCBU national championship. It just isn't going to happen.
Yeah.
And granted, it was close. I mean, it like they got screwed in that game with the refereeing and all that stuff. But I don't see it. So I have Bruins in 6. You have Bruins in 7. What can the people look forward to from you with the hockey news coming up?
Yeah, the hockey news will have previews, recaps, opinions, side stories all throughout the playoffs, updates from practice, you know, media availability. My Twitter is BellFraser1. If you want to follow along there, I'll post all my articles there. And then over at New England Hockey Journal with Evan, best content around.
True.
We'll be keeping it up over there. And then end of season stuff for BU Hockey, if anyone still following along, Daily Free Press, Boston Hockey Blog, about the last month on the beat. So we'll probably have a couple things over there before graduate and go to the real world and join.
Yeah. Evan. When is graduation?
May 19th. Yeah.
Oh my God. You have 1 month left. You got to hit the real world. Ooh. Slaps you in the face. Like you wouldn't believe it. I remember Spoked Z the day I graduated, he tweeted something. I can go back and find it. It was something like, well, it all sucks from here. It's all downhill from here. And I was like, come on.
It's been pretty good for you from here, Evan. So
It has been good. And it'll be good for you too. All the Bruins Beat listeners are gonna come out for your graduation. They're gonna be like they're gonna be like the fans that stand at the edge of Warrior when the players drive out. I was actually stuck behind Jim Montgomery on Thursday morning. There were a bunch of cars behind me, and I wasn't gonna like pass him. Someone beeped. And I was like, I hope he doesn't think that was me. Cause like, I'm just like, you know, I don't care. Like take your time.
Yeah.
But I got a kick out of that. So maybe fans will do that.
My number one worry, I was like, if Bruins make it far and there's a game on, you know, graduation week, I'm like, sorry, mom and dad, I got to go to TV.
No, please go to graduation. Do not miss that. Anyways, quick programming note, Bruins post-game shows will continue this playoff run. Carl Corazini and I, former Boston Bruin, former BU captain, current St. Mark's head coach, we'll be doing the post-game show live right after every game. You guys were great last year joining, and now you're going to have the Leafs fans. Leafs fans were joining that post-game show when the Bruins lost in Game 7 to the Panthers and ripping in the comment section. So I said it on Poke the Bear. I am open to the Maple Leafs fans. I am warm and welcome to them. I am nice. I'm going to be nice to them, even though they're probably not going to be super nice to us. But that's the way life is. So they're welcome. I know they're going to be all over the post game shows. So, I am here to greet them. That's my philosophy this year. I'm sure that'll go out the window 5 minutes into the first post game show after game one.
Like, how do we block all these Leafs fans?
Yeah, how do we get them out of here? But no, they will be here. So, you gotta be accepting. That's what you gotta be accepting. Anyways, that's been this week's episode of Bruins Beat. 50 minutes. I cannot remember the last time I did a 50-minute Bruins Beat. That's Bell Frazier. I'm Evan Marinofsky. Bruins Beat listeners, have a great rest of your week. Teenage Wasteland.